I went looking for a story, and my friend Lynn brought me an adventure.
It's okay, we're Americans. We're here to help you.
My name is Bob Wilton. I'm a journalist. I've been investigating a story about a classified government program. I'd heard that the U.S. government was training psychic soldiers, and that Lynn Cassidy was the best of the best.
I've been reactivated. I'm on a mission.
I could come. Lynn's story was unbelievable, crazy, and completely true.
You must create warrior monks who can pass through walls and see into the future. Holy.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to our remote viewer special. And it's brought to you in part by UFOCon, and that'll be being held September 15th and 16th in Santa Clara, California. UFOCon. We'll talk about it a little later. It's one of the most impressive and don't miss events in the UFO year as far as conferences are concerned. It's held in Santa Clara, California every year, and it's always a big success. You heard that opening, and the opening was very interesting because it was from a motion picture about remote viewing. And, the whole thing in the picture, and Hollywood, of course, does different things about subject matter to make it a little more exciting. But I think after you listen to this 3 hours, you'll find out that remote viewing is actually very, very exciting, and people who get into it get hooked. And as a couple of people have told me, it's pretty tough to get it going. It takes lots of practice, but it can be done by almost anybody. But we don't have almost anybody on our show tonight. We have some of the most respected people in the remote viewing community, and we look forward to having them on. Dr. Courtney Brown will be here in a moment, and we will talk to him first, and then we'll bring in Russell Targ. And Russell Targ is well known for his pioneering efforts as well with Hal Puthoff there at Stanford University some years back now. Then we'll join Lynn Buchanan out in New Mexico, and we'll be talking to Lynn about his remote viewing experiences and his military experiences as well. Then we have Dick Allgaier, who is in Hawaii, a former television newsman, and I don't know, he may still be on the air. I'm not sure. We'll find out when we talk to Dick. Dick has some very interesting things on YouTube on how to remote view and what remote viewing really is. So we'll be talking to him. And then when Lauren Cott will join us from Calgary, Canada. And Lauren is fairly new to remote viewing, but not that new. But you'll find out a little bit about her as we go along as well. Of course, that bumper and the introduction of the show featured the men who stare at goats, which was the movie, which I was talking about a little earlier. Right now, I think we need to get right into the show. And the way we're going to work this is we're going to introduce each of the participants and talk to them individually, and the others may join in as we go along. Then after we get all five of the remote viewers on the air, we will then talk among ourselves for a little while, a little panel discussion about things that come up. Good to have you listening, and let's get the show underway. Our first guest is Dr. Courtney Brown. A man of some reputation and a very interesting fellow, and I think you'll enjoy. We could do 3 hours of Dr. Brown alone. In fact, all of these people we have on tonight are capable of going on and on about the facts of remote viewing. Anyway, Dr. Brown was he was the founder of the Farsight Institute. And then he's on the line from Decatur, Georgia. And Dr. Brown has many, well, he has about as many websites as I do, really. I might run over those here in a minute and talk to you about those. One of them, of course, is Courtney Brown Jr. I said Jr., I meant CourtneyBrown.com. I was thinking JerryPippin.com, making you a junior, Courtney, and I think you probably had your website before me. Welcome to the show.
Jerry, it's a great honor to be here, and I want to thank you for not only inviting me, but for inviting such an interesting group of people and such a wonderful round table concept.
It's going to be very interesting show indeed, and I want to thank you for giving me kind of the idea. You and I were talking about doing a show, and I just kind of, you know, one thing led to another, and we hadn't done a lot of remote viewing shows. We had Russell Targon a couple of times, but we really haven't delved into the whole subject like we should. So you embraced this in this entire concept right off the bat, Courtney. So, and it's okay if I do call you Courtney, right?
Yeah, actually, even I'm also a university professor at Emory University. I'm a mathematician, and I applied mathematician, and I work within a social science program. But I do not do my remote viewing research at Emory University. I do it at the Farsight Institute. That's spelled FARSIGHT.org, because we're a nonprofit. And all the research that I've been doing since the 1990s has been focused within that institute. We are, in fact, the leading science shop anywhere. We have full-blown scientific studies, and we've mastered the realm of public participation in remote viewing studies. So the days when a scientist would go into the laboratory and do something and then come out and say, this is what I did in my laboratory, trust me, those are gone. We have the ability now, and we've been doing this for years, to have public demonstrations of remote viewing and public experiments with remote viewing, and the public is participating through various ingenious methods of military-grade encryption and experimental designs. The public is participating in the data collection process to know that we don't cheat. So it's a very interesting set of stuff, and I'll mention a little bit about that later on. I should also mention that Lynn Buchanan is, it's wonderful that he's going to be on the show today. He is, in my opinion, unquestionably the lead instructor in a form of remote viewing called controlled remote viewing. He not only has taught hundreds of people, but he has professionalized a great many people, meaning he works with them and keeps working with them and keeps working with them. He's got a level of dedication that you just don't see very often anywhere. And he's actually a member of the board for the nonprofit, the Farsight Institute, and he has worked with me for many years in a whole bunch of experiments. I hope we get a chance to talk about some of those experiments that are absolutely riveting. Another person who's not here, but who is here indirectly, is Glenn Wheaton. And Glenn Wheaton has, he's the director of the Hawaii Remote Viewer Guild. And I say that he's here indirectly because he taught Dick Allgaier, who is a celebrity newscaster in Hawaii and who is one of the best remote viewers on the planet as well. So this is a very interesting group of people. We have also Russell Targ, who is one of the pioneers in the early science studies. So this is very interesting, and again, with Lauren, we're going to have one of Lynn's students as well. So Glenn Wheaton and Lynn Buchanan are both members of the board of the Farsight Institute. So you're getting a lot of Farsight in this particular radio show.
But as long as we were mentioning websites, you got a third website. I need to mention that. It's FarsightPresentations.com.
Well, that's interesting. See, the main website is www.farsight, F-A-R-S-I-G-H-T, like seeing far.org, because we're a nonprofit. But Farsight Presentations is another website that we use for presenting cinematic and DVD-type presentations of independent remote viewing studies. So when we have remote viewing studies that are done at the Farsight Institute that are collaborative, they work with the HRVG method and the CRV method and other methods, and those experimental designs are worked out primarily by myself, but then the actual experiments participation involved Lynn and Glenn, and those are sort of official Farsight studies. But then again, there's a desire sometimes to do unofficial studies, meaning studies that are that one of us may really want to do, but it's not sort of embraced in the Institute. So we have the Farsight presentations as a venue for that. And I sort of think of that as something like the Sundance Film Festival for independent films. So we have the Farsight independent place for independent remote viewing studies.
Yeah, I've been over there. You got lots of videos, information,
yeah,
and everything.
In fact, we have done so many studies that one of the complaints that has been raised is that when people come to our website, sometimes they complain that they're just overwhelmed because so much is there, so much is free, so much, and they don't know where to start. And it was because of that we came out with a DVD for the first time called The Farsight Experiments, and it summarizes and puts together and ties everything together of all of our recent research over the last 5 or so, 6 years, and puts it all together in one place. So when people look at the Farsight Experiments, they get a good understanding of where we are, what we do. They hit the ground running. And we have projects on that that are described fully and tied together, such as the Multiple Universes Project. We actually did a test of a theory that has been around in physics since 1957 with the dissertation that was published by Hugh Everett. Actually, he wrote it at Princeton under John Wheeler. Often referenced as an other worlds or multiple universes concept. And it was widely laughed at the time, but it's really the rage in young people in physics these days. It's finally come. And it basically addresses the idea that there are many universes, many varieties of us. So, Jerry, let me just ask you, what color is your shirt right now?
Well, mine's blue.
All right. Well, there's another version of this where you have a red shirt on or a green shirt on.
I had a red shirt on earlier.
and there's another version where you're interviewing somebody else, or Lynn's talking first, or maybe Russell Targ's talking first, or maybe something completely different. So, and all of those universes, according to the theory, happen simultaneously. And then the physics for how this could possibly be has been a very interesting thing that's been going on in physics. They actually had a NOVA show that was actually originally a BBC show on this whole thing just a couple of years ago. And I was at the University of Colorado at Boulder this summer, and I gave a presentation at the Society for Scientific Exploration on the physics of how this works. And so it's really quite an interesting thing. The recording of that presentation is actually available on our homepage at farsight.org. And if you just scroll down, and you'll see on the homepage an embedded video of remote viewing and quantum science, and that is the best way to start to get an idea of where, you know, why remote viewing can actually work according to a theory that I've developed over the years. And again, I presented it formally this summer. And I've also been speaking. You know, in the old days, everyone who works in remote viewing eventually experiences, or right away experiences, in the old days, people used to laugh. And in the beginning, when I started doing this type of research, all of my academic colleagues, they all thought I was deluded. They thought it was ridiculous. They thought I was ruining my credibility, the whole thing. Nobody is laughing anymore. You know the movie that had Whitney Houston in it called Waiting to Exhale?
Mm-hmm.
That's what it's like in the academic community right now. Nobody's laughing. Everybody's holding their breath, and it's like a waiting to exhale moment. And so this is, and, you know, and Jerry, I should really say, never bet against a smart guy who never gives up. And that's what we're really talking about. So anyway, the styles of remote viewing that we use in our studies at the Farsight Institute have a different intellectual heritage. And Lynn may talk a little bit about this, but his intellectual heritage comes from Ingo Swann, who basically worked with his official program in the military. It was in the Defense Intelligence Agency, and he can talk more about that. And that was an official program. And again, in my opinion, he is the leading instructor on the CRV method.
You know, Courtney, you brought up Ingo Swann. I think it would be a good time for us to bring in Russell Targ.
Oh, sure.
Who knew him well. And he and Hal Puthoff worked with him out at Stanford, I think.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Now, before we do that, let me just mention that the other group that we often, that we work with a lot, is the HRVG method. Hello, are you still there, Jerry?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, we're calling Russell, but go ahead.
Okay, it's the HRVG method, and that has an intellectual heritage that's different, and it ties back with Dr. Richard Ireland, and that was in an unofficial, you might call it a movement within the military. Glenn Wheaton came out of Special Forces Intelligence, and that was a different thing that went on, and that was where the so-called First Earth Battalion stuff came out of, that the men who stare at goats stuff came from. But again, the main character who was played in the movie by George Clooney was named Lynn, and Glenn and Jim Shannon made sure of that because they wanted to, give their nod their hat to Lynn Buchanan. So they were trying to be all-encompassing. It's a multifaceted personality in that particular character. But anyway, you've got a lot of things going here. So, Jerry, what you're doing is bringing in Russell?
Yeah, Russell Targ's on the line now. And
I'm on the line with you. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, and Russell, how are you? It's good to see you.
I'm very well.
I can't see you, but you guys can probably see me since you're home with viewers. I don't know. Russell, before we even get started, I want to thank you again publicly for when we met back 3 or 4 years ago. You gave me a little Bosch and Lomb lens. As most people don't know, but I'm visually impaired. And you gave this little lens to me, and it's come in handy. It's a little pocket thing, and it's saved my life many times. And
really
I appreciate
you
taking the time to talk to me about it.
I used the lens just like that all through my college education, and it's in my pocket every day.
Yeah, and we really appreciate it. Now, let's talk. You got a book coming out, right?
I have a brand new book called The Reality of ESP. It's published a couple of months ago, and it has a nice aggressive subtitle called A Physicist's Proof of Psychic Ability. So my publisher said, no more Mr. Nice Guy, no more looking at ESP. You've either got it or you don't have it. So I said, let's call it A Physicist's Proof of Psychic Ability. And the idea is that the evidence for ESP and remote viewing is now so strong that it would be statistically unreasonable to deny it. And in the book, I make the argument that the National Institutes of Health, NIH, did experiments to see if aspirin would prevent heart attacks. And after a year or so with thousands of people, they found the people taking the aspirin had fewer heart attacks. So they stopped the experiment because it's unfair to have a placebo group who's having heart attacks while the other group is not. They say, we have proved that aspirin prevents heart attacks. And that all happened about a decade ago. And my point in the book, and I discuss this in the evidence that Jessica Us put together, is that the statistical evidence for ESP is 10 times stronger than the evidence that the NIH had to argue that aspirin prevents heart attacks. So if anything can be proved in experimental science, ESP has been proven to exist, and we don't have to apologize for it anymore. The proof issue has been handled.
Interesting book.
So my new book is called The Reality of ESP and is available on Amazon or at bookstores near you.
Okay, well, that sounds interesting. You've been doing all kinds of interesting research all your life, Russell, and we're talking to Courtney Brown here. By the way, say hello to Courtney.
Hi, Courtney. Hey, I'm happy to chat with you.
Yeah, it's great. Russell and I know each other going way back.
Yeah, and we talked to Russell the last time we met personally. You talked about Ingrid Swann and Courtney brought up his name right off the bat. So I guess he's the pioneer of some of this anyway.
Yeah, in 1972, Ingo Swann came to SRI, and he taught Hal and me how to do remote viewing. So we, Hal and I started a program in the fall of 1972, and Ingo disagreed that we shouldn't waste his time looking into a box or looking into envelopes. He said, I can focus my attention anywhere on the planet, and you guys are trivializing my ability. So Ingo showed us what a remote viewer could do. So you could say Ingo taught Hal and me. Hal and I taught 6 Army intelligence officers at Fort Meade, and the Army taught the world. So that if you now go to Google and search for remote viewing, you find there's 2.5 million pages devoted to remote viewing, to quite a lot of pages for a phenomena that's still not known to exist.
Yeah, I didn't realize there'd be that many pages of information available. I'm impressed that you knew that.
The idea is that remote viewing is very easy to teach. So what happens is that as soon as a person learns to do remote viewing, they learn that swiftly in a workshop, and they say, well, that's really cool. I can do all kinds of interesting things, and it wasn't hard to learn. Maybe I'll teach people how to do that. So teaching remote viewing is like giving people permission to make use of an ability they already have. We're all remote viewers, and the job of a teacher, like Courtney and me and then Buchanan and others, our job is to give people permission to unlock the potential that they have. In a way, you can't teach somebody to see, but you can convince them to open their eyes, and that's really what we're doing.
Now, I might add something to this. Everything that Russell said is absolutely correct. The only difference is that mostly, in terms of myself, I'm mostly the chief investigator for science projects, and other people do the remote viewing when we do these science projects. However, the training for the people we use is at a much greater level. It's a little bit like playing the piano. So you can go up to a piano and you can bang on it and make noise. But if you want to play in Carnegie Hall, you're talking about a decade or more of constant practice, skill. There's talent involved, but it's also, you know, sweat, perspiration involved. It's a lot of just hard work. And that's really what we're talking about. So the types of people who have participated in the project that we have done in the Farsight Institute typically have a training period under Lynn or Glenn Wheaton of a decade or more. And they're really exceptional. So the types of data that you get from people like that, I call these military grade, but that's really not correct, because these are second generation or third generation trained remote viewers using these structured data collection procedures. And these people are absolutely extraordinary in coming up with data sets for the things that they're supposed to be perceiving that are absolutely detailed, extraordinarily accurate. It's totally different from what you get if you train somebody for, say, a day or a weekend. Because what happens is you can sort of give them permission to start getting access to this data. But if you want them to walk into a room, sit at a table under totally blind conditions, double, triple, whatever blindness you want in terms of, you know, they have no knowledge of the target, and then to come out later with 10 or 20 pages of very detailed data about those targets, about the things that they were supposed to be perceiving that they didn't know about, but, you know, that was part of the experimental design, that there's something called a target we can talk about later. If you want that to happen, 10 or 20 pages of detailed data, with a huge proportion of it to be accurate, with really clear pictures and really clear written work, then you need people that are really skilled at this. And those are the type of people that we work with at the Farsight Institute. I must admit, this is also one sort of an interesting thing. This whole field of remote viewing started with Russell Targ and Hal Puthoff. And it's very interesting that to this day, I'm going to say something that's going to sound like boasting, but it's not. So just hear me out. I am the leading scholar, the leading academic in the science of remote viewing as it is performed using the structured data collection procedures that were developed by the United States military and used for espionage purposes, or procedures that are derivative of those methodologies.
Claiming to be the leading academic, I'd like
so let
to
me
ask
explain
you,
why. Let me explain
ask
why.
Ask you a question before you go into a long dissertation. You're claiming to be the leading academic, if I heard you correctly.
Yes.
And you're saying that the people you train are Carnegie Hall virtuoso doing Army quality remote viewing. I'm not aware of any work that you've published in the open scientific literature demonstrating that. In our decade at SRI, we published in Nature, the Proceedings of the Electrical Engineering Society, the AAAS, the American Institute of Physics. We did many, many double-blind, formal remote viewings where people could get the right answer or they could get the wrong answer. We published these findings, and all the world knows the accuracy and the reliability of remote viewing as we do it at SRI. There are many people who are doing something called controlled remote viewing who publish nothing, but they make great claims about your accuracy.
Russell, I didn't complain anything about the stuff you were doing. In fact, I was saying it was pioneering stuff and it was really great. But the issue about publishing stuff, we just had our very... The type of remote viewers we work with are different. And I said I was the leading because, if you let me finish, I would have said, because I am the only academic. That's why I can say that. The thing that's so surprising is that I don't have any other academic colleagues anywhere that study remote viewing using these military procedures. Now, in terms of published stuff, you do know that I've published stuff. You read the Journal for Scientific Exploration, and then this year, just a few months ago, we had a leading study coming out in that, and that's one of the premier venues for this type of research, and it's the premier venue that you have used as well. And it was a study that came out at the Journal for Scientific Exploration. The title was Remote Viewing the Future with a Tasking Temporal Outbounder. And in fact, this was the very first publication that was ever appeared anywhere using these types of highly trained remote viewers. So
did
this
you
was
do
a
number of different trials in this and compare accuracy and reliability?
Russ, I'm sort of flabbergasted that you haven't read the article. So that's the whole thing.
Well, we're on the air. Probably I'm not. We're on the air with hundreds of people. Probably I'm not the only one. So
okay.
I'm asking
well,
you,
to
did you do
article,
a number of trials?
Yeah, but to get the article, you already get a subscription to this. But to get the article, you can go to the homepage for the Farsight Institute, farsight.org, and right in the middle of the homepage, you'll see a banner saying, Latest Peer-Reviewed Published Research Remote Viewing the Future. Now, this particular article deals with a project that we had that went on for 1 year. And this was called the Multiple Universes Project, and it was an explicit test for the idea that there are multiple realities. And it went on for 1 year, 10 demonstrations. The intellectual complexity of setting up the research design was absolutely fascinating. And so for those people who are listening, and I do hope it's more than hundreds, that is a very good place to go to get this article fresh off the publication, fresh off the presses, and it gives you an idea. It also the article also has a great deal of background into the history of remote viewing research, and Russell's own work is prominently discussed, all in a positive manner, in this article as well. So I am not saying anything that detracts from what you've done, but on the other hand, it's been a very hard slug out to get remote viewers who are highly trained to get
Russell.
In this experiment you did, how is the success or failure of individual remote viewings determined? If somebody forecasts an event in an alternative universe, it's very hard to tell. Whole idea of alternative universes is phenomenologically questionable, because you can never communicate with an alternative universe, nor can you get any information from it.
Okay, you're talking right off the... You're shooting from the hip now and haven't read the article.
Well, wait a minute here. We'll have plenty of time for this to and fro on this, so let's hold on here.
And we're going to bring in some other remote viewers, and we're going to open up the whole thing for a panel discussion. So hold on a minute, Courtney. Russell, before I bring on Lynn Buchanan, what important points would you like to make at this point about what you're doing and how you feel things? Now, I'll get into the alternative universe with both of you in a little bit, but maybe we should hold off on that.
The idea of the multiple universe is that there may be many, many millions of alternative universes created at the time of the Big Bang, and one of the properties of these multiple universes is we can't communicate with them and they can't communicate with us. So they're really not a great source of information. If I claim, for example, the universe full of very loquacious, intelligent Siamese cats, that's what I see psychically, and I can draw a picture of those Siamese cats in the alternative universe, you can neither falsify nor verify what I had to say.
You're building a straw man argument that is totally ridiculous.
Well, we'll talk about this a little bit. The time's getting away from us. You believe, Courtney, that there is an alternative universe, and you can... I don't guess you can prove it, but you think you have lots of evidence.
You
ask me what I'm doing, Jerry. I'm spending my time these days... I used to do stage magic, where I would stand on the stage and fool people. What I'm doing now is doing workshops. I've just written this book, which took me a year, presenting the very best data that's been published in scientific journals and was part of the Secret Army program, the reality of ESP. But what I'm doing principally is teaching people how to be psychic, giving them permission. For example, Stephen Schwartz and I have a workshop in 2 weeks at the Omega Institute in New York. Stephen and I will be teaching from the 26th to the 31st of August at the lovely Omega Institute up the Hudson River. We'll probably have 30 or so people. And at the end of that week, people will be able to accurately describe distant locations, hidden objects, things that they will see at a later time. And they will know for a fact that they were absolutely able to do that because they will see the object at a later time. And they will leave confident that they've been able to do remote viewing, that they've learned a skill that they can incorporate into their lives. And more than that, it gives them a very spacious picture of who they really are, because they can move their awareness into these timeless realms and realize that there's more to them than meat and potatoes and bones and sinews, that they are actually spacious beings.
So okay, this will be in New York, August 16th through 30th?
It's last week in August, August 26th through 31.
Okay, I'm sorry.
And that's at the Omega Institute.
And anyone go there?
Anybody can go. Omega Institute is just up an hour
Give your website. We didn't do that yet.
Our website is ESPresearch.com.
And you have information there?
And I have the information there. And people can write to me from there. So my website's ESPresearch.com, and I'll be teaching at the Omega Institute the last week in August. You can all have a good time and plenty of arguments, and everybody will experience something psychic because we're working together for a week.
Okay, we've given a preview here, Courtney and Russell, of what's coming up here when we get all five of you on the panel. But we're going to have to take a break, and I'm going to bring in Lynn Buchanan next. We'll be right back. Both of you, hold on, and we'll be back. And this is brought to you, this remote viewing special, by UFOCon. And UFOCon is probably the number one conference on the West Coast for UFO information, and it's coming up in Santa Clara, California, very soon. Are you curious about extraterrestrials, UFOs, alien abductions, implants. I can go on, the secrets of space programs and what they are. And then, of course, Area 51 and other UFO hotspots and topics. Then you don't want to miss the UFO Con, September 15th and 16th in Santa Clara, California. There are 13 speakers, including Douglas Dietrich. He'll be presenting Roswell as you never heard it before, in a very interesting theory he has. Daryl Sims, known as the Alien Hunter, will be there. And he has some new information and some new research he's been doing. And he'll be revealing that, these new discoveries about implants. Chris O'Brien, who is in, you know, around Colorado taking pictures all the time of paranormal activity, he'll be there with his camera. And he'll be talking about camera surveillance of UFOs in hotspots and other places, and what you can actually do in regard to taking pictures of UFOs. Laura Eisenhower will be there, too. And her almost mission to Mars, which I can't wait to hear. Anyway, joining them again will be Richard Dolan, Alfred Lambert, Weber, and Dr. Weber, always interesting. Jordan Maxwell, Michael Surratt, and he knows just about everything there is to know about secret black operations, especially about aircraft. So you might plan on meeting those special guests, and there'll be special guests at this conference, by the way, Sean David Morton, who attracts a lot of interest as well. John Wells on Saturday night will be the host of Coast to Coast from there. So
tell us again where this will be.
This is going to be in Santa Clara, California, and it's going to be there September 15th and 16th. Very interesting. I'll give the website here in a little bit, and people can go over and find out about it. And it's very interesting. I'll give the website right now, Russell, since you asked. It's UFOCon2012.com. That's UFOCon2012.com. We are now going to bring on Lynn Buchanan.
Jerry, I can say that's so close to me that I'll come that Saturday and Sunday and just make trouble asking questions from the floor.
Okay, great. Great. I knew you lived right by there. That's great.
I live very close.
Yeah. Fantastic. Okay, we're going to get Lynn Buchanan on the line next. We were talking to Lynn a little earlier via Skype, and I think he's there in Alamogordo now.
Yep, I'm here. Can you hear me?
How you doing?
Okay, how about you?
Okay, it's great to have you on again. Lynn Buchanan, say hello to our other two guests so far. We have Russell Targ and Courtney Brown.
Good. Hi to both of you. And I just wanted to say to you, Jerry, thank you for having me on the show with this group. Russell, of course, you know, Courtney was talking about the generations, and Russell is first generation. Being military, I was the second generation, and we have the people that we teach remote viewing to, which wind up being the third generation, and we even now have teachers, some of them, taking up the flag and teaching to a fourth generation, and so this thing is really taking on, and it's taking on because it can prove itself. Russell was talking about, you know, proof. And it's exactly like Russell says, it's ridiculous to look at the proof that's there and still turn a blind eye to the fact that it exists. And the work that Russell is doing, and Courtney and several others, the Hawaii Remote Viewers Group. I see Dick is on with us, Dick Allgaier. And Lauren Cott, who's doing some fantastic work. you know,
well,
it's
great. Now you're the executive director of Problem Solutions Innovations.
Yeah.
What is that exactly?
When I got out of the military, the remote viewing was still classified, and I started a data analysis company in Washington, D.C. area called Problem Solutions Innovations. When this became declassified, I started getting all kinds of calls for training and you know, consulting, police work, archaeological work, and all that. And it dawned on me, you know, I don't have to drive into D.C. every day anymore. So I turned Problem Solutions Innovations into a remote viewing company and training and service company. But my background is in databasing. And so, you know, we database the work of all of our students, all of our viewers. When we do a project for people, we get feedback from them as to the accuracy of what we provided, and we database that. We don't just say, okay, thank you. And as a result, we have each viewer has a databased track record. And Russell is absolutely right. Like alternate universes or things in the past, you know, what did Jesus's mustache look like and things like that. There's no proof from that. And so the only proof that we have for operational work is a viewer's track record. And we look and we see a viewer is, a single viewer is, let's say, 80% accurate in his perception of colors, but 20% accurate in describing shapes or sizes or something. Well, we know how much to trust the perceptions he give us on targets where they're either is not or may not be feedback.
Then would you have, if you were looking for a lost child, for example,
yes,
would you have a single viewer doing that, or would you have a team doing it?
Oh, no, I would have a team doing it. One of the problems with remote viewing is that it's humans doing it. And, you know, as long as it's a human doing it, it's not going to be completely accurate. You're going to have mistakes. It's like doing... You would never do an entire project with only one viewer and even one session. So the thing is, let's say the take a hypothetical case. The police want to know who it was that abducted a child. Okay, they have several witnesses, and the witnesses, eyewitnesses, all give different stories. And they say, okay, we want to know. Description of where the person lives. We want a description of what the person does for a living, their car, and so on. We would look in the database and say, okay, we want to know the color of the car. Find the viewer that's most accurate in colors. Then we want to know the shape of the car and the condition of the car. Find the viewer for that information, which has proven over hundreds of sessions that he's most accurate in that. And no, you never trust an important, you know, project to just one person or even one session. And then when you hand the information into the police, they don't send out the troops on that. They put it into the pool with their other information. And it, you know, stirs into the pot to give them a better overall look. So,
do you do a lot of police work?
We used to. We had a lawyer join us, and he sort of took over to legalize the work we were doing with police, and he made such an enemy of the police that that they just sort of stopped calling us. We have built up a new
And you got to be careful about lawyers here. The producer of this show is a lawyer,
yeah.
Joe Champion. Well, so
we have, have reestablished friendship with many departments, and we're doing things, and we're doing some good. I haven't been too quick to do that because back when we were doing so much, it was just eating up everything that we did, all of our time, all of my time. I wasn't getting anything else done and all that. And so while I do worry about missing children, I know that you find one, and the time it takes to find one, 50 more are abducted and so on.
What's the thing that you can do that you do most reliably?
That we do most reliably?
If I wanted to hire you to do something for me, what's the thing that you have the greatest success at?
So far, the greatest success that we seem to have had, mainly because we can get feedback on it, is working for businesses. We love doing archaeological work. The archaeologists don't tend to give us feedback like they should, but the business plans and intentions, research and development, you know, scientific research and development, or even mechanical research and development. We've had great success with space exploration companies. And police departments, like I say, we've backed off on that quite a bit, and yet it's still my favorite. But, you know, we provided...
Yeah, I guess it gave you a feeling of doing some redeeming social value there. I mean, you could see the results.
Yeah, listen,
have a website. Is it crviewer.com?
That's it, uh-huh. Yeah, you study remote viewing for a couple of years, and after that couple of years, you know, you're tired of practice targets, you're tired of everything else, and you bring home one missing child, and it's worth it.
You know, I might chime in.
Courtney, I was going to ask you to get in involved here.
Yeah, I might chime in here that with regard to sort of criminal type of cases, there are individual viewers that do participate with law enforcement regularly, and they do interact with Lynn and so on. Angela Thompson Smith just participated in it's now become a rather famous case involving law enforcement that really was really quite remarkable.
Yes.
Des Smith also, who has worked with Lynn a great deal, works regularly in Britain with law enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
And Joe McMonagle has worked with law enforcement.
Oh, yeah.
And all of these people have worked individually. And Lynn is absolutely correct. It's nice to work with teams. But there are sometimes individuals that work with law enforcement.
And don't forget Pam Coronado.
Well. Yeah, Pam Coronado, of course, yeah.
Pam has worked with the FBI extensively and with different police departments and had great success at it.
I'm going to bring in Dick Allgear here from Hawaii as we need to go along here. Lynn Buchanan, you got anything else you want to talk about your company before we get I get a lot of questions already in the chat room and emails banged up here and some phone calls. We're not going to go on the phone calls for another 30 minutes or so, folks.
Okay. Yeah,
I have a general question. I worked for a couple of years with Pat Price, as you know, and Pat was a unique psychic. And we were called, I'm going to tell a story, which some of you know parts of. We were called in by the detective agency in Berkeley after Patricia Hearst was kidnapped.
Mm-hmm.
And Hal and I went to the police department with Pat Price, and Pat turned the pages of the mug book they had with hundreds of pictures, and he put his finger on Donald DeVries, who was in fact the kidnapper, but no one knew that. And he said, "That's the ringleader." And the police said, "Well, that's interesting. We know who that guy is, but haven't seen him for a year. Where are they? Which way they go with the heiress?"
Yeah.
He said, "Oh, they're about 50 miles north of here. They're in a white station wagon next to a diner across the freeway from some tall white gas cylinders, and there's a pedestrian overpass across the freeway. When the detective said, I know where that is, it's on my way home to Vallejo, they dispatched a police cruiser. In 10 minutes, they had found the car that still had cartridges rolling around on the floorboards that we could recognize from our earlier trip to Patricia's house in Berkeley. So that all took half an hour.
Yeah.
So and that was entirely correct.
Yeah, now I said I wasn't going to take any phone calls, but we have a student of Lynn's. We have a student of Lynn's on the phone here, I think. Is he still here, Joe? If he is, let's put him on. Okay, he'll be calling back in about 30 minutes.
So, is, how
I wanted to give you another little boost there, Lynn, but he took me at my word. I wasn't going to take phone calls for another 30 minutes.
Okay, but Russ still
has
a question.
How unusual is Pat Price?
Oh, extremely. I don't know of anyone who can do that, even very highly talented psychics. And, I've just...
Well, Joe McMonagle could do it.
Yeah.
Hella Hammond was able to do that.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
I did it the one time they called me in.
To that degree?
Not to that degree. I was able to identify a murderer accurately enough so he confessed when he was confronted with the idea that a witness saw him.
Oh, yeah. Well, we've had people be able to, describe locations and describe the culprit, describe victims, and describe key witnesses, also to describe the location of missing evidence and so forth. But to the degree that Pat Price could do it, no. I've never known anybody who can do it to that degree.
Okay. Dick Allgaier, are you there? I don't know if we called him yet or not. We need to get him on.
Yes, I'm here. Aloha from Hawaii. Hi, Jerry.
Yeah, how you doing?
I'm pretty good.
Yeah, we're talking about, I thought of you immediately because you're a TV newsman, or were for many years, so we're talking about crime issues here.
Well,
and if it bleeds, it leads.
Yeah, first let me say aloha to Lynn and Russell and Courtney. Hello, everybody.
Aloha.
And to the listeners around the world. It's a beautiful afternoon in Hawaii. If you're talking about forensic remote viewing, I would say the best forensic remote viewing work for law enforcement is never actually seen or published.
Right.
So Lynn.
If I can speak to that, when we work for the police departments, they usually ask, what we want for pay. And what we do is, we ask for either a department baseball cap or a department coffee mug for each one of the viewers. And you'll sometimes go into a viewer's home and he'll be a shelf in the hallway or something like that that has police department coffee mugs and baseball hats lining down the thing. And it's a thing of quiet pride for the viewers.
Yeah. Well, so I'll tell you a little bit about myself. I've been a professional journalist for 38 years, a TV reporter, most recently at the ABC affiliate in Honolulu, and I've won some awards for excellence in journalism. So that's my day job. I became interested in remote viewing back in 1996 when I heard Lynn Buchanan on the radio and Courtney Brown on the radio and Joe McMonagle and others. And so when I heard about it back then in the mid-90s, I thought to myself, well now, if this is true, wouldn't that be something? So I began investigating it, and I attended Courtney Brown's Far Sight. I read about CRV and studied that a little bit, and then that all got me started. And then I met Glenn Wheaton, who was a former remote viewer for U.S. Army Special Forces. And he's been teaching us out here in Hawaii for 15 years, and I've been working with him for 15 years.
Is he a member of the Hawaii Remote Viewers Guild?
Glenn Wheaton is the president and founder.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah. While most journalists find out about a subject by going out and interviewing experts and talking to people who have experienced something, talking to people who have knowledge about something, I spent the time to actually learn the skill to prove it for myself. So I've done many, many sessions I've been studying with Glenn ongoing, nonstop, for 15 years. I've taken part in projects. I've designed and run and published projects. I teach remote viewing. My students have been published. And I'm one of the lab rats, too, for some of these studies. So it's been far and away the most interesting thing I've ever been involved with. It's just fascinating. It's always something new and interesting, and you learn a lot about yourself and about reality.
Now, how do people in Hawaii find you? They probably, most people probably know about you, but do you have a website?
Well, for our remote viewing work, the website is hrvg.org, Hawaii Remote Viewers Guild .org, hrvg.org. And if you poke around in the library there in the sessions, the one thing we do at HRVG is we publish our work. If we do a project or make claims or teach people, we put the work up. We're about making the case for remote viewing, about demonstrating that this is real and it really works. So hrvg.org, if you Google my name, you'll find all kinds of stuff. My TV.
What kind of project are you working on right now?
Can you tell me? Can't talk about that. There's a rule in remote viewing, and that is
okay.
No target talk, because you want your viewers. You have to be blind. We even want the analysts to be blind. So we have some interesting things going on, and we can talk about them later. I would say one of the most interesting things we did recently was in conjunction with Courtney Brown, and that was the his peer-reviewed study in the Scientific Journal. We were going around about that earlier, but it was called Remote Viewing the Future with Tasking Temple Outbounder. Why I think this is important is we did remote viewing sessions under indisputable scientific protocol successfully, accurately, and precisely, and we described events a month before they happened. And Lynn Buchanan was one of the taskers for these. So we would sit down and do a session, and we would give that session to Courtney Brown, and he would encrypt the session and put it on the internet so anyone could download that, but they couldn't look at it. They could hold that on their computer for verification. Then, a month later, an event would happen. And a month after that, either Lynn Buchanan or Glenn Wheaton would task that as a target. So we did the sessions before the event and before the tasking. Why this is important is Courtney has proven that remote viewers can remote view an event before it's even tasked, before it even happens. And this was done so that the public could download the sessions and hold them on their computer, but not look at them until...
Can I ask you how you determined whether the remote viewing was actually correct?
Well, actually, Russell, you need to read the article to do that. It's a ton of all the articles. The article has a lot of analysis in it, and it's very easy to do it. So, these are not sessions that are fuzzy data with a lot of stuff that has to be vaguely interpreted. These are very clear sessions with very clear descriptions of the targets. The issue has always been that it's relatively easy for people to remote view the past or the present. Remote viewing the future has always been the big bugaboo, the big difficulty thing. This led me into the thinking that this multiple reality thing might actually be involved here, because if there are multiple realities, then you know which one you want in the past. If the Titanic sank in your time stream, then you know which one you want, so there's no ambiguity with that. But if it's in the future, and if there are multiple realities, then it would be impossible to predict any particular future. So the idea was to have the tasker, the person who designed the target, go into the future to be cooperating with us. And so the whole idea of this, you don't have to buy the multiple universes interpretation, but the issue is when you have a future temporal outbounder, somebody in the future cooperating with you in the experiments, so that that person is picking the targets. Now, the sessions are already done in the past. The targets themselves are any event that could happen in the world after the sessions have already been done. downloaded by tens of thousands of people, encrypted. They can't see them, but they know we can't cheat. And then after that, a third month down the road, then the tasker picks some event anywhere in the world, identifies what that is, posts it up on the website, posts up the passwords to decrypt the sessions, and then you have really good descriptions of future events that happened a month after the sessions were done and that were chosen a month after the events actually occurred. Now, how we actually analyze that is in the, there's tabular data, it's multiple different ways of analyzing, it's a large discussion, but it's in the actual article, and I encourage people that are interested in it to go to farsight.org, click on the banner that says latest peer-reviewed published research. It's a very interesting article, and then to read it.
Well, yeah, this is Dick. Let me chime in on that, because there are a lot of listeners here listening to this show right now wondering what we're discussing and maybe somewhat arguing about. They can go to the farsight.org and look at that, look at the article and look at the session work. And the all of the sessions are on your site, aren't they, Courtney?
All the sessions are there as well.
You published excerpts in the peer review published article, but all the sessions are published on the site.
So that is true for all of our
sessions. People can judge for themselves. So Russell, I'd ask you, when you just claimed that when you teach people, and I believe you do, and I'm sure it's great training, but you said you guarantee they'll have a psychic event because you're going to be with them for a week and they're going to describe an object. We would ask you, is this randomized? Is there a control group? Is it replicated? Is it published? Well, how can you criticize Courtney's scientifically peer-reviewed article? And you haven't read it, but you're demanding a level of proof from him that you're not offering with your training.
Well, there's several questions. That is, what I'm doing is basically playing with a couple of dozen people for a week so that everyone has a chance to describe some object that was randomly chosen by somebody else. So it's not a publishable experiment. I'm not claiming that I did a published experiment. I thought I was asking an easy question, like, you have a certain number of viewers describing future things. How do you know it was correct? Or does everybody perfectly describe every target?
There's a scaling that's involved. But Russell, you know, you have published a lot of work, and I like all of it. I think you've done a tremendous job over the years in publishing a great deal of stuff. In any one of your articles that you've published, I'm not going to stand here and say, well, Russell, what did you do to determine this claim that you're making?
I could answer that in one sentence. I would say we took all of the targets, and a judge matched up all of the targets against all of the transcripts and got X matched correctly in a double-blind matching.
That's a very minimal description, and that has been done with all of our research. I would say that, in fact, you've actually done a great deal more than that in your published research. And if you read the article, you'll see that we've done a great deal more, and you'll see a lot of tabular analysis.
A different kind of question, then. If the work is as positive as we all think it is, and this is something that we can get feedback from Hawaii about, why do people still not believe in the existence of ESP? Where does the resistance come from?
Now, that is an incredibly interesting question.
Hold on to that thought, as they say, and we need to answer that question, but I want to bring in the other panelists before we get to that. And, you know, we're about 6 minutes past the top of the hour, so I need to identify what people are listening to. Dick can identify that if no one else can. This is Jerry Pippin's show, and I'm Jerry Pippin, and actually it's a special tonight, and it's a special on remote viewing, and we have five, and the fifth one we'll be introducing in just a second, top remote viewers in my opinion, and we're discussing issues just like what we were talking about before I jumped in to take the break. You're listening to this on the Inception Radio Network, and this program is brought to you in part by the UFO Con. It's being held September 15th and 16th in Santa Clara, California, and they have 13 speakers, including some very, very interesting people. And one of the most interesting to me, of course, is the ideas, as you know, if you listen to my shows, we do a lot of Roswell programs, and Douglas Dietrich's going to be there with an alternative Roswell hypothesis. And so that he's only one of 13 speakers. We'll talk more about that later. It's coming up September 15th and 16th, the UFO Con in Santa Clara, California. I'm going to bring in the prettiest part of the panel. She's the only female on there. Juan Cott, how are you? Are you there?
I'm wonderful, Jerry. How are you?
Good. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And say hello to our esteemed panel here.
Well,
and we have, first of all, Courtney Brown. Then, of course, we have Russell Targ, Lynn Buchanan, and Dick Alger. And before we go any further, Lynn, you are responsible for Lauren being a remote viewer, so why don't you tell the audience a little bit about her?
Oh, so it's my fault. No, we have, like I say, a fourth generation coming up, a third and fourth generation. And for those listening, I probably should drop some names because these are valid names, and there are so many invalid names out there in the field. Teachers like, the valid names are teachers like Lori Williams in Amarillo, Texas, Paul O'Connor over in Ireland, over in Dublin, Teresa Frisch, and Dominique Sorrell. And these are qualified people who really know their stuff. And probably one of the most knowledgeable and most intelligent is also the quietest, and that is Lauren Cott. And she is so quiet that most of the people in the field don't even know who she is. And yet she's doing some wonderful work developing new aspects to this field. She's now writing a book on a very important aspect, and that is ambiance perception. The ambiance perception plays very, very strongly into top quality remote viewing work. And she lives up in Canada. She's very quiet and never touch her own
horn.
She's
also very talented. I did not realize she did remote viewing originally. She came to my attention because she does voiceover work.
Yeah.
And, and we're always looking for people to do commercials, et cetera.
Yeah, fantastic remote viewer. And, I mean, she has studied this in depth. And so why don't I shut up talking and let her say something on her own.
Lauren, it's your segment, so go ahead, kid. Tell us a little bit about what you're working on. Whatever's on your mind.
Whatever's on my mind. Good evening, everybody. Good evening, Courtney and Lynn, Dick, Russell Targ. This is a real thrill for me to be here and a real honor, and I appreciate being invited. So thank you very much, Jerry. All these people have been major influences in my life. I think that Mind Reach by Russell Targ was one of the very first books that I read about remote viewing. I think that I purchased Cosmic Voyage sometime thereafter, shortly thereafter, and in hardcover, I might ask, might add. And Lynn, of course, Lynn. Dick, I met at IRVA a few years ago, so this is just a thrill for me to be in and amongst all these wonderful minds.
Plug my book.
Oh, yeah. Lynn has a book, too. Lynn has a few books. But, yeah. So it's just a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
Are you still doing remote viewing, or are you part of a group, or are you taking a little hiatus, or what?
Oh, I'll be doing remote viewing until they pull the pen right out of my cold, dead hands. I will be doing remote viewing forever. No matter what else I'm doing, I will be also doing remote viewing. So, and Lynn is right. I'm writing a book currently. Hope to have it done by the end of the year. And it's sort of related to remote viewing. It's about ambiance, which is another way of saying awareness in a kind of a simpler way. And it's kind of based on one of Lynn's own exercises. And maybe if Lynn wants to talk a bit about that with me. The exercise is called the ambiance exercise. And my book is based from that exercise and things related to it. So
yeah, Dick Allgaier, I think I saw on YouTube on one of your pieces, you had some very interesting things there, by the way, and I'd urge people to go look at them, that you said, or maybe you said it to me, I don't know, in an email, but that once you start remote viewing, you use it every day, whether you're thinking about it or not. Is that right?
Was that question to me, Dick in Hawaii?
Yeah.
Oh, what happens is remote viewing is a formal way to train you to communicate with your subconscious. We all have a subconscious that maybe has been trying to tap us on the shoulder and scream at us for our whole lives, but we don't listen to it. And when you learn a structured form of remote viewing, it teaches you to open and establish a communication pathway with your subconscious. Once you open that up, your subconscious will talk to you, and you'll start hearing things and knowing things, and it will change you. You become a different person. You become more, I don't want to say psychic, but you become more aware.
How about the rest of the remote viewers? Do you agree with that?
Yeah, if I could add to that, your subconscious has been treated like a child your entire life, and once you start giving it responsibility and you start demanding accuracy from it and so forth and training it to grow up, it actually grows into an adult. And instead of an inner child following you around with all your life, you have an inner adult who is extremely smart and extremely fast. And you find that the remote viewing not only is, you find that your subconscious not only knows what's going on in some foreign land at some, coordinate, it also knows where you left your car keys. It knows what your phone number was when you were 3 years old. It knows why you do those things you don't want to do, but you wind up doing them anyway, and why you don't do the things you want to do, but you wind up not doing them. And it's sort of the ultimate, way to know thyself as well as, hey, the rest of the universe, actually.
Hey, Jerry, let me ask you a question real quick.
Okay.
I'll be the journalist for a second.
Okay.
Have you ever?
You can't give up your day job.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Have you ever had someone place a photograph of something in a sealed envelope without you knowing what it is? And have you ever tried to describe it? Have you ever tried to do that?
I haven't, but I know what you're talking about. People.
If any one of us gave you a little bit of training, and you don't know what you can do until you actually try it, you might amaze yourself. Don't you all agree?
Being a talk show host, as you know, Dick, you have to have a certain amount of perception, I guess. So I'm not completely blind to it all.
Dick Courtney asked me if I've ever done anything double blind. In all of my workshops, I end with a formal double blind experiment, where everybody has to describe a unique picture in an envelope, and their partner then has to try and match the picture they described to one of four possible things. And it's a 25% chance of doing that, and typically half the people get it right. people off the street after even a weekend can learn to do that surprisingly well.
That's right. This is
one of
the things that...
In the American Diving Society where I did that, two-thirds of the people got it right. That's the most psychic American group I ever worked with. They blew me away.
Lynn, is that you?
Yeah. One of the things that probably should be pointed out here is that there are basically four modes of remote viewing. One is research, another is training, practice, and then operations. In operations, we don't do squeaky clean work. And if you ever want to see the most squeaky clean work that is possible, go to one of Russell's classes. I mean, you wouldn't believe. It's a new definition for squeaky clean.
Okay, we're ready to start.
It's not hard to do. You just have to have the will to do a double-blind experiment with a control so that a person can indeed fail. If a person says, I see something that looks like a windmill, and the interviewer chooses the windmill picture, they got it right. If the person chooses the bridge picture, they got it wrong.
Yeah,
and it's really clear whether they were correct or not. And I think that if you don't have the opportunity to simply get it wrong, then you're fooling everybody.
That's right. And this is the answer to what Dick asked earlier. This is training mode. It's not experimental research mode, which, you know, the training mode doesn't require peer review papers to be published and all this. For the training that he's doing, you obviously won't have that. Now, the operations mode gets less squeaky, and you really can't even accurately judge it by anything except the results, you know. You might have the most squeaky clean remote viewing session, but if it doesn't help bring the kid home, then what good was it? And it's in operations, it's the results, not so much the information, the accuracy or the percentage of accuracy. It's the results. Does it find the evidence? Does it find the missing child and so forth?
Forecasting stock market or silver market is a good way to see if you're really fooling yourself or if you can do the thing in a double-blind fashion.
That's true.
I did that with a great psychic, Keith Harari, and he got 9 out of 9 correct. And we made a lot of money, as you all know. And then 10 years later, working with spiritual healer Jane Catra and myself, and we were run by two mathematicians in a double-blind fashion. And in a case where Jane and I had to agree on our unique individual targets, we got 11 out of 12 right, showing that even a scientist could be psychic. But this was a publishable experiment, double-blind. We could fail. And I'm reading Courtney's paper now, and I don't see a control group at all. So I think that...
A little preview of what's to come, folks.
Yeah, but you can forecast markets. You've got to take time, and you have to be willing to stick your neck out and say it's going up or it's going down. Otherwise, if you say it's sort of going up, blah, 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 you're fooling yourself. Now, I think that these people are, if they want to be taken seriously, then you've got to do double-blind experiments where you can actually fail.
That's right.
Courtney. The reason I say that, I have Courtney's paper in front of me now, so I'm no longer a blind reviewer.
If I could stick something in here, this is Lynn again. If I could sort of guide what's to come in this, I would imagine that a lot of the listeners are saying, well, that's all nice and good and all, but what do you do and how do you do it?
And we're going to get into that here, and we're going to take a break here in just a minute.
Okay.
And open up the phone lines, and we'll probably get some discussion going between each other. Lauren, I guess you figured out by now to get in on this group, you're going to have to raise your voice.
You got to do it.
I'm doing it. I'm here.
And don't be bashful.
I didn't hear anybody volunteer an answer why we're not taken seriously if our data is so hot.
I'll give everybody a chance to do that right now.
Paradigms. One of the strongest things in the world is an entrenched paradigm, and you try to break it or even move it. It's just amazing. The police all know about the blue sense, and they all depend on the blue sense, and yet they will tear up anything that has the word psychic or aura or anything like that on it. I had a Amish neighbor who said that they did not need psychics because they have people with second sense, and that psychics are basically going to hell. And anyone who really wanted it would use second sense instead, or second sight. And
well, I guess we're all psychic to a certain extent.
Oh, sure, yeah. And it's paradigms. It's just you don't rock the boat.
If you think about it, let me chime in here. If you think about it, once remote viewing is accepted as a real phenomenon, the entire academy will be shaken. It will be taken on the level of every discipline, starting in physics. According to the lead paradigms in physics, whether you're dealing with classical mechanics or relativistic physics, the transfer of information across time and instantly across space cannot be allowed. But it does happen. So what you're talking about is a revising of what we now would think of relativistic physics to being a subset of reality that is much more complex than physicists are willing to accept. And whenever those types of intellectual scaffoldings exist, and new data come in that really require the intellectual scaffolding to be completely dismantled, then you're going to have tremendous resistance. Max Planck, long ago, said that the great changes in science do not occur because someone comes up with a great idea and people accept it. Rather, they come about because of generational replacement. So the people that are 40 and 50 years old, they are people who came up with new ideas when they were graduate students. And then when they became, and they were basically attacking the people who had ideas that were older. And then when the people who are older grow old, retire, and die, those graduate students become 40 and 50 years old. And so really what you have is a situation in the academy where everything that is taught is, well, not everything, but a great deal of what is taught is 20 to 25, 30 years obsolete. And it's the graduate students who are really talking about new and innovative stuff. But their new stuff isn't going to become dominant until the current leaders move on. So it's that paradigm shift that Lynn is talking about that is so crucial. It's a psychological issue as much as it is an intellectual issue. And in fact, someone would say it's more of a psychological issue than anything else.
Okay, right. we'll get everybody involved here. We're going to have to get ready to take some phone calls, and I got a lot of emails to ask, and we want to get back to that question that Russell and Courtney thought it was a good idea. Do either one of you remember what that was? Well, wait a minute, and you can think about it while I take the break. But I want to take time out to do a commercial. Everybody take a little breather for about a month. No, maybe a minute and a half. not long at all. But we'll be back. And are you curious about extraterrestrials, listeners? UFOs, alien abductions? Oh, I could go on with the subject about things that you're probably interested in, alien implants, maybe the secret space projects that you've heard about, maybe even a space program going on that we don't know about it, Area 51 and other UFO subjects. Well, you can hear all 13 speakers, including Doug, as I mentioned earlier, Dietrich,
who's going to be talking about a subject near and dear to my heart, Roswell, New Mexico, and he will come up with something you probably never thought about. And this, of course, is all at the UFO Con in Santa Clara, California. Daryl Sims, the alien hunter, will be there. And he has some new discoveries that he wants to talk about and present publicly for the first time. And I'll give you a hint. It's dealing on implants. And I've talked to Daryl a couple of times. He's going to come on our show, but probably not till after this conference. Chris O'Brien, who's done some pretty important things with cameras, shown some pretty strange camera surveillance pictures over the years. He will be telling you how you can get some of those unusual UFO hotspot photos yourself. Yes, it can be done. And then we have Laura Eisenhower, and she tells us about her trip, almost, mission to Mars. I've watched this discussion going on for a long time, and I'm not ready to endorse any of it, but I'm like Russell Targ. I think I'll go and listen anyway. Joining them are Richard Dolan, Alfred Weber, who will be talking about most of the same subjects. If you want something really nuts and bolts alike, well, Michael Schrant will be there, and he'll be talking about black projects, aircraft projects. Jordan Maxwell will be there as well. And there's five other great speakers. And I tell you what, plus you'll meet special guest, Sean David Morton, who's had kind of a low profile for a while, but he's ready to go public again, and he'll be there in Santa Clara in the middle of September, along with John B. Wells. That'll be Saturday night, and he's the host of Coast to Coast that night. So, you need to put this down on your calendar. If you'd like to get more information, just simply go over to the website, ufocon2012.com. And that's something you really need to investigate, especially if you're on the West Coast. And Santa Clara and that area is a really pleasant place to go on a little vacation. So take the weekend off and find out a little bit about UFOs, won't you? And once again, I want to give the date just for those people who didn't get it earlier. It's September 15th and 16th in Santa Clara, California.